Hello and welcome to the KBC Well Good podcast with me, Jerry Hussey. I'm a performance psychologist, passionate about helping people reconnect to their best version of themselves, helping them reawaken and ignite their inner passion and ability through the power of the mind. I've been lucky to work with some of the world's best athletes and business people, and can't wait to share the simple yet powerful tips proven to help you be at your best. I'm going to be joined by a number of guests in conversation to tease out those tips. I hope you enjoy it. Today I'm delighted to be joined by a client, but more importantly, a very good friend of mine, Jason Quigley. Jason Quigley I've known for many years as an amateur boxer, European champion, world medalist, and a professional unbeaten boxer now who have no doubt is in store of great things. In this conversation, we're going to be talking about awakening your inner champion, which little things that we all can do on a daily basis to help us unlock and explore the best version of ourselves. This was recorded on location, so I hope you enjoy. Welcome back to the KBC Well Good podcast series with me, Jerry Hussey, and I'm delighted today to say that I'm joined by Jason Quigley, professional boxer, as some of you might know, but I've had the good fortune of knowing Jason for quite a number of years through his amateur career and witness not just the highs, but the ups and downs and the challenges. And I think sometimes we see sports people at the pinnacle of their career and enjoying the high moments, and we sometimes think that that's what being a high-performance athlete is. But in my conversation today with Jason, I want to talk about awakening your inner champion and what it is to be somebody that has to perform consistently at a high level and also be human, so self-doubt, fear at times, frustration, and hopefully through the conversation with Jason, we'll realise that high-performance athletes are actually not that much different than the normal people. And I always say there are no such things as superhumans, but there are human beings that have a super attitude and a super mindset. And we think that champions are born. But in this conversation with Jason, what I want to try explore and unlock is that a super mindset can actually be built. What we look at is seven areas that I think are important: self-talk, visualization, habit building, self-affirmation, the people I surround myself with, how to silence my inner critic, and confronting fear daily. So these are conversations we'll have. And more importantly, Jason is going to tell you how he takes each of these areas and applies it to his everyday life, be it in training or his own personal life. So Jason, thanks very much for joining me.
Thanks very much for having me. Looking forward to this very much. So it's nice to give people an insight to athletes and athletes to come out and maybe be honest about a lot of things as well, because I think athletes try their best to put up this big shield and this big hard front and everything like that. So no, I'm very excited about this.
Yeah, thanks very much. And as I said, I've known you know for quite a few years now, and it's great for me to get some feedback, because everybody in sport thinks they're doing a great job, and the psychologist will always think he's the most important person, the strength and conditioning coach. But you might just talk about, you know, what is it in terms of mindset? What is it that high performance athletes need to do what they do and to take those risks? How important is the mind? And over the years, how have you found, you know, is it worthwhile to invest in developing a mindset or developing mental skills?
Yeah, without a doubt. Like, as I suppose a lot of successful people will know, that if you don't have a goal or an ambition or something to work towards, you're kind of standing in the mud and you're not going nowhere, really. But for me, it was something that I loved first as a kid. Do you know what I mean? And it's something that I think people have to do. They have to do what they love, or they'll never really go anywhere. And if they do go anywhere, they'll never really be happy at their achievements or anything like that. And I learned that throughout my career, that I always thought about being champion and winning this and winning that would make me the happiest person ever. And especially whenever all I did was watch it on TV and seeing them winning and thinking, oh, that's the life there. Do you know what I mean? But as I grew up, matured, and understood things, it's not all about the glitz and the glamour. It's about the hard work and everything that goes on behind it. And, you know, some of these people that are winning and achieving these things that a lot of people want in life, they're not very happy doing it either. And that's where I like to try very recently in my career, not only my boxing career, but in my life, that I have been looking at the foundations, like going, stripping everything back and trying to find out who am I without boxing, different things like that. Because I used to think I'm Jason Quigley the boxer, and that was it. There was no Jason Quigley that likes going down, having fun with his mates and hanging out with his family and doing different things like that. So for me, I had all the mindset right. I had all my goals, my ambitions, my affirmations, everything like that. I had that all in order. And I was still scratching my head, Tyce, thinking, this just isn't fitting together. This just isn't pulling together, right? So I had to strip a lot of things back. And as you know yourself, Jerry, I mean, you do a lot of work together. And you've helped me a lot. And it is about finding that happiness in you and putting the puzzle together. You can't paint a perfect picture with a jigsaw with a few missing pieces, you know.
It's great that you mentioned that, because in one of our series where we talk about goal setting, and I spoke with Anthony, the co-founder of Wellfast, you know, the first thing I said in the goal is you have to paint a picture, and you have to have the different pieces in it. But more importantly, it has to be a picture that is passionate to you, that has an emotional connection. So you talked there about, you know, passion and love. And I think that's the key to everything, that we sometimes we live with what we think is successful, or we want things that other people have because we think they'll bring us success or happiness. But we are the only people that can bring ourselves happiness or success. And it fits in lovely that you said that, because, you know, the picture that you paint of success has to take in the different facets of your life, your professional life, your personal life. And it's not just about what is it that I want to achieve. It's who do I want to be as a human being. So it's great to hear that. We're going to kick off, so, with the seven topics. The first one for me is really important, is the power of self-talk. I talk a lot about the power of the words we use, and your mind is almost like a fertile garden, so that when you use certain words, they get planted in your mind, and that's the fruit you bear. So I always say that the words you use, you know, becomes the world you live in. Or another way of saying it is the stories you tell yourself is the way your life will move. And so many people, when you listen to the way they speak, they're speaking about things that they're fearful of, speaking about things they don't want, or things they can't control. We've talked over the years, Jason, about self-talk and the power of words. How is that something that you apply in your professional life as a boxer, or your own personal life?
It's something that, you know, that is very important to me, because I have learned that I used to be very anxious as a kid and everything, and everything would be going well and great for me in life, and I'd be maybe winning tournaments, and me and my friends and family and everything would be getting on great. And then next thing I'd start telling myself, right, something's going to go wrong here now, you know. And there was no reason for anything to go wrong, but I started saying to myself, things are too good and something's going to go wrong here. And I was starting to look for things to go wrong, because I was telling myself that, you know. And I'm starting this off in a way, this is where I learned it, and this is what I can relate back to, is because I started probably my young teenage years and just before my teenage years self-talking in the wrong way, you know, thinking life's too good and this is great, what's going to go wrong here? So as I grew up and started to achieve a little bit more and, you know, get to different levels in boxing, and then coming on the Irish team and working with the likes of yourself, I started to got confidence in myself first, got more belief in myself, and I felt more, I do deserve this. And then the self-talk and everything started to come into it. I remember whenever I was training for the European Championships, the under-18s, whenever you get a shower or a bath in the bathroom, the mirror and the, it might steam up and everything like that. So I used to write on the mirror, European champion 2009. And I would see it. As soon as I get dried down and go out, the door would be open and it would go away. But say my mother then would go up and get a shower. You can always see then after it, the print that you've already done in the mirror. Yeah. And my mother came down to me and she says, Jason, I see what you're writing on the mirror up there. I goes, oh, did you? I got a wee bit, you know, embarrassed kind of a little bit. And I says, yeah. And my mother's just a lovely human being, you know, and she turned around and says to me, don't be putting that pressure on yourself. And I didn't know what to take from it, or I didn't know what to say to her. And I was like, okay, Mum, I didn't really say nothing to her because I was like, but I need to do this to tell myself and believe in myself. And when it came down to it, I did believe in myself. Mm-hmm. But my mother was just my mother looking out. She didn't want me to get disappointed or anything like that. So that was the first stage in my career. And I started doing out little writings on bits of paper. And, you know, I used to do out writings with the long-term goal, like become a world champion, this, that, whatever. But since I started working with the likes of yourself, I started doing out stepping stones to get to that. And like winning the box off championships, winning the national championships, then it's became not winning the Europeans, but just performing at the European championships and world championships. So everything, as you grow, as you get older, as you mature, you have to be patient with these kind of things as well. You have to make sure what ones work for you and what affirmations, what sayings had a spot with you. And to be honest, you can learn everything and you can do this, that and whatever. But at the end of the day, what I have learned probably most in life, it is going with what you feel inside your stomach. Because nobody can tell me that's wrong. Because nobody else feels it.
Yeah. And that story about the mirror is powerful. And I didn't know you were going to say that, but it's exactly what we believe, that we leave an imprint. So every time we think, every time we visualize, we leave an imprint, and then that's what we find in our world. And how many times do people in the morning tell themselves it's going to be a really stressful day, the traffic's going to be heavy, I have a really big meeting on. And we're creating that imprint all the time. We're creating the map of what our day will look like. And once you create that map, it's very hard for it to go any other way. So it's a fascinating story that, you know, the power of words, and then the more specific the words you get. So the big goal was become European champion, but then the more you started to write was the more specific you described it. And that leads me on to visualization, because, you know, the neuroscience and the science and research behind visualization has proven that, you know, as we perform an act, as we say words, we fire certain neural pathways in our brain. Each time we fire that pathway, gets wrapped in myelin, so that becomes the biggest thing, the biggest pathway. So then a pressurized environment, when we have to make a decision fast, that's the pathway we're going to find. So the key to building a habit or building a skill is to fire these neurological pathways regularly until they become habit, so that even in a pressurized environment, that is your default mechanism, that is your default language, it's your default word. But what we've proven is that visualization is a way of accelerating how fast we develop those pathways, because we don't need to execute those pathways physically. We don't actually need to do the behavior. We don't need to win that fight. We don't need to physically go through that ring walk for us to build a pathway so that we know how we're going to think, act, and respond when you hit that. So visualization for me is a really powerful way of, a little bit like your mirror, it's imprinting pictures in our mind as to how things are going to go. Is that something, Jason, you still use?
Yeah, I've probably really started using the visualization a lot more since I turned professional. As an amateur, we've used it a few times in training camps. It was kind of mainly more meditating after training sessions and everything like that. But for me, it really came into practice when I was professional over in LA. I had a lot of time on my hands as well. So I was able to do it at a lot more ease. And after every training session, I used to just lie down in the middle of the ring and just put my hands out, my legs, spread everything out, and just get into a pure relaxed mode. And as time went on, I started to use a kind of a healing through my visualization. And leading up to big fights, any fights really, they're all big at the minute, you know. So leading into fights, I would just lie down at first, go to a happy place, you know, and it always makes me laugh because whenever I think of a happy place, it's Happy Gilmore when he's trying to putt and everything at the golf. That's what it reminds me of. So right away I get a happy kind of feeling and I just go to my happy place. And as it says, everybody's happy place is going to be different. Mine's is on a beach, you know, listening to the waves coming in. But that's me. That's what I feel at my happy place. And then I just start relaxing, enjoying where I am, taking in the sounds, everything like that. Then I'll go then and start visualizing the fight, visualizing my opponent, visualizing the weigh-in, because the weigh-in can be a very intimate thing as well in boxing, you know, especially the professional boxing. It's the weigh-in, the face-off. Sometimes it's the first time you get to look at your opponent in the eye. So I just go into the visualization and I run through the way that I think it would go. But I also run through it with an open mind that it mightn't go like that, so that I'm not going to be thrown off when it actually comes to it. And then obviously we step into the fight and I visualize what I'm good at, what my game plan is, because by that stage you know your game plan, you know who you're fighting. It's even better after the weigh-in because you know the height of them. You can size them up a lot better. So I just visualize the game plan, you know, from the first round into the last round. And my visualizations have changed nearly every fight because I'm learning something new every fight. Like, in my visualizations, I used to visualize getting in there and winning just with my hands up at the end of the fight, and used to visualize knocking them out and different things like that. Whereas, like my drawing in the mirror, it has all changed. The things that I've wrote down, my visualizations have now changed to not knocking them out. If a knockout's going to come, it's going to come. It's more now for me being more precise on performing well, because I used to visualize just winning and that's all I wanted to do. But I forgot on how to win. How do you win? And that's something that I was winning and I still wasn't happy, because I know I'm a better boxer than some of my performances. So then I had to go back and reevaluate everything. So I think the key things that I'm kind of talking about over the first two things that we've started to talk about is patience, really, as well. You know, and learning to understand that you're not going to have it perfect right away. You're not going to have all the right affirmations wrote down and all the right visualizations. Be patient with it and find what's right for you. But for me, the visualizations have been great and they've given me confidence getting inside the ring. And as it says, they're going to keep changing with every fight.
Yeah, and I like that idea that it becomes more about process. And I think the big thing with visualization is you create a picture in your mind, but each picture, each word that you use in your mind creates an emotion. So as you see yourself successfully go through the weigh-in, managing the ring walk, opening, you're not just visualizing it from a visual point of view, but your body now is experiencing a sense of calm, a sense of confidence, and they get linked. So what happens is as we visualize, we see the weigh-in, we see your opponent, and then we feel the sense of calm, the sense of confidence. And the body believes that it has already experienced that. So the next time we walk into the weigh-in or you do that ring walk, it's amazing. Your body just replicates the same feeling of calm. That's very interesting because, you know, as you've developed, you've gone from outcome visualization to process, where you begin to visualize, you know, the small process details. And what's interesting with visualization is as you know, it's not just the picture that you're creating. You're also creating an emotion, because when you plant a word or you plant a vision, a picture in your brain, it's linked to an emotion. So if you're meditating or you're visualizing at the end of a training session, there's endorphins in your system, you feel good. The gym is a very familiar, safe space. So that feeling of safety, composure, confidence is linked to what you're visualizing. And your brain believes that it's actually happened. And that when you encounter what should have been a stressful situation, so then when you walk into the real weigh-in 3 or 4 days later, your body says, I've seen this before, and I know exactly how you want me to respond, and I'm going to be calm and confident. And I think that the power of visualization isn't just that it allows you to see what you want to happen. More importantly, it allows you to plan for how you want to feel when you're in that situation. And when you said about, you know, not being too close-minded about how it has to go or how the game plan, because you have to be open-minded. What you're doing is you're embedding a sense of emotion, a sense of calm and confidence. So for anybody out there that is, you know, attempting an interview or an exam or something that could be perceived as a stressful environment, to visualize that when you're in a calm, safe space. What happens then is the amygdala, which is in the limbic part of the brain, associates those sounds, those pictures, and those smells with the sense of inner calm and the sense of inner confidence, so that when you then encounter the situation in reality, you're automatically triggered with that sense of calm and confidence. So that's visualization. And there's so much we can get about it. For anybody to even, as you said, have the patience to start exploring it, it's powerful. I want to move on to habit building. And the last few mornings we've been together driving around the car, and instead of coffee, we're drinking hot water and lemon. And little things throughout the day that I've seen have just become habits. So we all want to develop better habits around our fitness programs or maybe around our nutritional plans. And sometimes we say, oh, I haven't time. You know, my day is busy enough. If I'm to add all these new things in, where am I going to get the time? And what I always say is around habit building. So take a habit that you do anyway, brushing your teeth or having a shower, which is 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 minutes long. And use that time to visualize. Use that time to breathe. So sometimes you can just take an old habit that you do every day anyway, and then build a new way of thinking, a new way of feeling, a new way of doing it. So it's the same time, but done differently. What are the habits, Jason, that you have built around mindset, around nutrition, around particularly pre-sleep? I think that's a really important one, and we'll do a full series on sleep. But throughout your day, what are the little habits, and how have you managed to make them become your new normal so that now you do them without thinking about it?
I think it's important for people to know that people might think they have habits that are good and that work for them, but I think it's always good to come and check in with it, you know, to see, is that habit really good? Because I was a serious coffee drinker. I wasn't for a while, then I got into it, and I don't even like the taste of coffee, but I just started to get a habit for it. And I used to just run and get a quick kind of espresso before the gym or anything like that. And right away, it was just a habit for mine. And I thought I was doing good. I thought, this will give me a good kick now before training and away I go. Whereas I have changed that habit recently over the last couple of days and all, with the likes of yourself and, you know, from watching and learning and listening to different people. It's unbelievable what the coffee, whenever you actually look into it, what it does to you. It just gives you that quick fix for a while, and you're up and you're high and you're running about and you're getting things done. Then next thing, you're getting a bit sleepy and you're not getting everything done. And then you start getting annoyed with yourself. And it's not a vicious circle, but it can be.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was like the likes of yourself, Jerry, that got me into that kind of a routine, and, you know, watching the likes of Transcendence and different people like Dr. Libby Weaver. She was the first time I actually realized how bad coffee was. Whenever she says to me, she says, "You're going to get scared now when you hear this, but caffeine is not good." Like, and she says, by just changing that with a hot water and lemon or ginger or something like that there, she says, it can just change your whole day. Because I think it is very important what you put into your body from the get-go, because that's the way your day starts. And that's just one simple thing that I have done recently. But meditation before bed is very important for me, because if you have a late training session or if you have a fight coming up, you'd be buzzed up, you'd be ready to rock and roll, and you know, everything be. And sleep's so important, especially coming into. I remember training camps used to be amazing for me. I used to be in bed early, up early, training hard, everything was going great. And then see the week of the fight, I would end up tossing and turning, not getting as much sleep. And then I brought about a meditation into just lying in bed with a meditating thing on your phone or on your laptop or whatever it is, and just put it at the side of the bed. And next thing I know, I'm dreaming and I'm in Wonderland. I'm fighting in my dreams and everything. And then you're up in the morning and you're refreshed. So habit building is very important for me. And the simple things like sleep, like a good start in the morning. But I was just very used to my habit building through boxing. You know, every day was you got up, you learned how to jab, you learned how to right hand. You know, it's a habit, it's a process. And that's how you get to where you get to, by continuously doing it and doing it and doing it. But I think people are very important to look at the habits they do and come back and touch in with it every now and then and see, is this habit really working and good for me?
Yeah. And I think that's a great way of saying it, because, you know, in psychology, or my clients have talked about making the unconscious conscious. So there's so many habits that we have that we don't even think about. We just do it without thinking about it. And sometimes the scary thing is, deep down, we know that the habit isn't even good for us. But we have a story going on in our head that somehow permits it. So, you know, we make excuses. And what we need sometimes is to just sit down with a pen and piece of paper and just look at, what is my morning routine? Is the first thing I put into my body a stimulant? And what is that doing to me? When I feel tired, you know, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and what I need is some, you know, light exercise or a fresh walk or fresh air or, you know, 3 minutes of meditation, do I do that? Or do I put more stimulants into me that is just going to create more sugar spikes? And maybe not just a cup of coffee, but a cup of coffee in a sugary. And if we're to think about it, most of the habits we have are just absurd. They don't make any sense. And deep down, we know they make no sense. So write down, what are the habits that I have? What are the things that I tend to do that I'm nearly unconscious? Am I still getting into bed looking at a phone screen? Why the hell am I doing that? Am I still, you know, waking up in the same days that I've woken up for the last couple of months? So for me, habits, you have to make them conscious first. Write them all down. Track yourself over even a week. How do I start my day? What do I do in the middle of the day to refresh, re-energize my mind and body? What do I do at nighttime to help me unwind, unplug, and help me prepare for sleep? And I think, you know, as Jason said, it's so simple then. Once you become conscious, to start replacing the old habits with the new ones. The next thing, Jason, is it linked very much with the first one. So self-talk, we talked about the power words. Maybe just very quickly, talk to me about self-affirmation. It's something everybody hears, but what is self-affirmation? What does it mean to you?
Self-affirmation, as we've said about a lot of other things, can be different for everybody, and different sayings and different affirmations will suit everybody. Self-affirmation wasn't a thing that I used to do. It was all self-talk, mainly what I used to do around my career. And then as I touched into myself a lot more then, and I started to learn the self-affirmations which make me happy. So self-affirmation for me is basically what I'm grateful for in life. And I might say it in the morning as soon as I get up. I might say it in bed before I go to sleep. And self-affirmation is just what I'm grateful for. And it's not big cars or houses or nothing like that. It's stripping it back to the simple things. If somebody takes all these big cars and houses away from you, what's left? Mm-hmm. It's your family, it's your friends. at your partner. It's just simple things like that. And for me, that's what self-affirmation means for me, is just the simple things in life and what I'm grateful for.
Yeah, I think you've nailed it. For me, you know, self-affirmation is different to self-talk, because self-talk is some way of creating a picture or creating an imprint of, you know, what I want to happen. It's a great way of, I call it, telling future truths. But affirmation is affirming all that is good about my life right now. Because in any given minute, there's lots of stuff going on in our life, and some of it absolutely isn't what we wanted, and some of it isn't great. But there is rarely time in our life where we can't affirm something that is good or somebody that is good in our life. And what I've absolutely, you know, become really clear about is the more you focus on the abundance that is in your life, and that might just be, I have an abundance of fresh water to drink. I have an abundance of time to spend with my loved one. Whatever little abundance, the more you think about abundance, the more you affirm the abundance in your life, is the more you open your energy to abundance, and the more abundance becomes part of your life. If you practice scarcity and deprivation, and you focus on things you don't have, that sends an energy of scarcity and deprivation, and it deprives you of more and more stuff. So for me, self-affirmation is taking the pieces that have nothing to do with what you do or what you want in the future, and it's affirming what is good and what is in abundance in your life right now. I'm one of the people you surround yourself with, Jason, which could be a good thing or a bad thing for you. One of the topics we've down here in Awakening Your Inner Champion is the people I surround myself with. How important is that?
This is one of the reasons why I'm so happy to be on this podcast, Jerry, is because this is something that I can give from a sports side of it and a life side of it. And the people I surround myself with, obviously I have to surround myself with top athletes, with driven people, with people that, you know, aren't working hard all week and going out drinking at the weekend. I can't do that. I'm a professional athlete. And this is why I'm so happy to be chatting about this now, is because in my career and in boxing, I need to surround myself with hard trainers, people who's going to push me, people that I might wake up some morning and feel, oh, I couldn't be bothered going to the gym today, but I know he's in the gym, and I don't want him to get the better of me or get fitter than me or get above me in rankings or whatever. And that could be even your opponent.
Yeah.
But you have to surround yourself with people that are all driven in the same direction as you, and that have the same beliefs in you and the same desires in life. Because if you're around people that, say, want to be a footballer, or if you're around people that want to work in an office job, the more you're around people, the more they're talking about their office job, the more they're talking about earning this amount of money, and then you're obviously going to be put into that bracket, and that's what your mindset's going to start thinking. And it's important for me also to surround myself with people that have nothing to do with boxing, because I'm not just Jason Quigley, a boxer. I'm Jason Quigley that likes to go out and have fun and joke around and have the crack with people and mess around every now and then and just have fun. Like, and I need to have them people around me. I need to have fun people, people that I'm comfortable around, and people that don't even know anything about boxing. Because then these people are with me because you're Jason Quigley, you're good fun, and I like being around you. And that's what's important. And, you know, for everyone out there that's listening, it's, you be around the people that make you happy, and you be around the people that are driven in the same direction that you want to go in life. Because if you're around that people, that type of people, then there's only one outcome, and that's for you to be happy and for you to be where you want to be in 10, 20 years time. And for anyone listening, who doesn't want that in life?
Yeah, absolutely. In many ways, we've already answered the next piece. The next piece is silencing your inner critic. And for years, I used to stand and, you know, fight my inner critic, because I thought he was, you know, the focus. He was the thing I needed to beat. So the little voice in my head that said I wasn't good enough, I was terrified, you know, that I didn't like speaking. I didn't like the sound of my own voice. I'd never be able to speak publicly. I tried too hard for too long to beat him. And the more energy I give to try beating him was the more he grew. So I decided I was just going to forget about him. And I was going to spend all my time and energy into what we've talked about, self-talk routines, more visualization, more better habits, more self-affirmations. So instead of focusing on the one thing I wanted to beat, I started focusing on all the other things that I could add in. And the more I added in visualization, positive self-talk, was naturally the inner critic started to drown out. So I think it's important at the offset that we say that there's two ways to silence the inner critic. One is to build in new habits, new self-talk, new patterns. And the second then is, of course, to challenge the self-critic when he turns up, because he comes up with all types of stories. People who see you in the ring, Jason, or see you, you know, live your life, you always come across as so confident. But, you know, an inner critic, is that something you have? How did you deal with it?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're all human at the end of the day, and we're all going to have an inner critic inside us. And, you know, we're brought up in the world of films and movies and everything like that. And I think they can pull it off well by showing sometimes that you have a devil on this shoulder and an angel on that shoulder.
Yeah. And two devils sometimes.
Exactly. And the way that I have kind of learned to deal with it, and I'm still dealing with the inner critic because I'm an athlete in a competitive sport. That's just going to be in me until the day you leave this world, I would say, because when you have that competitiveness in you, you're always trying to be good, you're always trying to better yourself, you're always trying to get out there. And for me, it is very simple, but it's very hard to do. And if you can visualize when your inner critic shows up, a wee devil on your shoulder, the one that's telling you you can't do this, he's better than you, or she's better at this, and it sounds so easy, but it is so hard. And all you have to do is just pat that wee devil off your shoulder and visualize him going. Visualize him away. Knock him off your shoulder, or just don't even listen to him. Turn to that other shoulder and listen to that angel on your shoulder, and listen to, you are good enough. You can do it. And you are the best. And them's the kind of things that I listen to. The reason that I'm speaking to this, I haven't read it off a book. This is just experience for me and what I deal with things. And everybody's going to have an inner critic. And people might look at the devil and the angel on the shoulder and think, geez, that's very easy done. Like, but yeah, it's not that easy done. But it is.
Yeah.
And once you get that into your head, and once you start silencing them yourself every now and then, it starts becoming a lot easier.
And what's great about that technique is it forces you to remember that you have both voices. You have that, what you call the angel, or what I would call the inner coach. So we all have our inner critic, but we also have our inner coach. And we have to at times realize that we have access to a different voice. We have access. So if it's the visualization that you talked about there, the little flick off the shoulder, but it is just, maybe it's just asking yourself, what would my inner coach say to me right now? Or if I was coaching somebody else in this situation, what would I say to them? And can I say that to myself? We're nearly there, Jason. The seventh one we've looked at is confronting fear daily. And those little fears might be, the minute I wake up in the morning, how many of us start by saying, oh no, I can't believe it's that time. I can't believe. That's fear. How many times is that thought followed by, oh my God, the traffic's going to be heavy? That's fear. But fear can be a bigger thing. Fear could be you're in a coffee shop and you see your dream girl walk in, and everything in your heart is saying, get up and say hello to her. And yet the inner fear is saying no. So fear shows up in many different ways. And ultimately, there are only two human emotions in life, love and fear. If you were to confront fear daily and build a habit of confronting fear, it is amazing. It builds confidence, and it also makes you realize that most of the stuff you fear isn't actually true and doesn't actually exist outside your own head. And the more you confront and overcome fear in the little things, is the more you will be able to confront and overcome fear in the big things. So Jason, maybe to finish up on the confronting fear, what would that look like in your life?
I think it comes down to the very basics as well, as, you know, walking into coffee shops and meeting people that intimidate you, maybe meeting people that you think are so superior than you, and you can't say hello to them, you can't talk to them. And like, I've noticed that because I've come up in sport and I've looked up to a lot of athletes and everything like that, and you think that these people are superhuman, and this is a thing that you create in your head.
Absolutely.
And as soon as you meet them, it's like, geez, he's just a nice fella. But if you hadn't created this in your head in the first place, then why wouldn't he be just a nice fella?
Of course.
Why wouldn't he just like coffee or what? Like,
yeah.
Just because they're doing something that you think so hard to get, or some people think, oh, they're unbelievable, they're still human. And it's about creating everything in our head. And I think this confronting fear, this can be eliminated by nearly everything that we've talked about before this. By the self-affirmations, the self-talk, everything like that there, visualizations. And for me, you face a lot of fears, you know. It's very, very normal in life to face fears, and sometimes you might be getting inspired with a lad that is meant to be serious power and you have a fear there. But why has he serious power? Because people have told you that. That's their opinion on it. That's not my opinion. I'm just believing what somebody else is telling me. So I think the thing about self-fear is we fear it because we've listened to somebody else, or we've seen a TV show. Whenever it gets dark at night, the music comes on TV shows, and it just starts creating. And then right away we think we're walking through the woods. Oh, this is scary.
You're in the movie.
But it's not.
Yeah.
It's because you've created it in your head. So things is, the more you go out there and stand up to these little fears and confront them, and just don't be afraid of them.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you go up and confront them, you'll think, what was I at?
Yeah.
You know, so it's just something that you have to get out of your comfort zone.
And you've said it perfectly there about power, you know. The only power that fear has is the power that you give it in your own mind. And, you know, like I said, most of the things we fear actually don't exist outside our own head. Jason, that's the seven. It's been a pleasure to chat with you and spend a few days with you up here in Dublin. We'll just run through very quickly. Number one was self-talk. What are the stories you're using? What are the words that you say? What do you say about yourself to yourself? Because your brain is listening and believing these things all the time. Each word has an emotional trigger that responds when you say that word. Your mind is a garden. Each word is a seed that plants. We talked about visualization and the power of visualizing little things and big things, but we also talked about process. Visualization isn't just about seeing the event happening the way you want, but more importantly, it's allowing yourself to feel how you want to be as that event unfolds. So visualization creates that emotional space of calm and confidence before the event actually happens, so that when you do encounter the event, you're triggered back into that space of calm and confidence. Habit building, we talk very simply. The key ones you spoke about were early mornings, hot water and lemon, you know, replacing coffee, midday routines, you know, to just keep us fresh and energized, and more importantly, around sleep routines and little things that you do before you go to bed. Because I really believe that sleep isn't something you fall into. You have to arrive at it. And there has to be a little process in place that allows you to arrive in a position that you're ready to sleep. We talked about self-affirmation, and really affirmation being different to self-talk, because affirmation is about affirming what is good in your life. We tend to sometimes get focused on what we don't want or the bad that's in our life. Self-affirmation is really about focusing on what is rich and what is abundant in my life. And the more we live from a place of abundance, as we radiate that energy, and we attract more abundance into our life. We talked about people I surround myself with, people who fundamentally will challenge you, absolutely, but people who believe what you believe in. and people who want you to be successful. The people you surround yourself with, they say your five closest friends or the five closest people in your life, they're the biggest predictors of where you'll be in 5 years' time. We talked about silencing your inner critic, and really silencing your inner critic is very much about, first and foremost, doing everything that we spoke about. Don't focus on the critic, focus on all the good stuff. And then at times, you talked about the devil, we do have a second voice. We all have the inner critic, but we also have the angel or the inner coach. And it's at that moment, just asking yourself, would I coach somebody in this way? If my best friend was in this situation, if my best friend had done this, how would I speak to them? And is that the way I'm speaking to myself? And finally, we talked about confronting fear daily, which is those little things. Get outside your comfort zone and realize that the fear in most situations isn't actually in the situation. It's the story or the picture or the movie, as you said, Jason, that you have created in your mind. And when you get out of your own mind and into the situation, the fear dissipates quickly. And the more you confront fear and the little things and overcome them, is you'll eventually realize that any fearful situation, when approached with the right mindset, can easily be overcome. So that's a nice little summary of our seven topics, and hope we'll be in contact, and on your social media, you'll be showing us exactly how you implement these in the gym, out of the gym and in life. And we look forward over the next while to having some fun with you on social media and following you. And thanks for being here, Jason.
Pleasure being here.